Hello, and welcome to Monumental, where we sit down with entrepreneurs, leaders, visionaries, and big thinkers making monumental change. Here's your host, Evan Holliday.
Welcome to Monumental. I'm your host, Evan Holliday, and today's guest is Bradley Davis. Bradley is really, truly making massive change in the world of podcasts. If you're listening now, you probably know a thing or two about podcasts. Well, Bradley is the founder of Podchaser, where he and his team are creating the go-to podcast database and discovery tool, or really you could think of them as even like the IMDb of podcasts. They have quickly grown to over 10,000 users and have advisors that include some of the founders or first employees of both IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. Now, Bradley has a background in industrial sales and is a serial startup founder and also does real estate on the side, specifically Airbnbs. So in today's episode, we are going to drill down and talk about how to successfully pitch your startup company and fundraise from investors, how to make sure you find your ideal clients and know exactly what they want before you even create your first product, and how he is generating wealth through his real estate investments. So much value in this episode. So before we get started, I wanted to give a quick shout out to everyone getting on iTunes and wherever you listen to your podcast, leaving awesome reviews. So here's Julie's 5-star review. I usually listen to music when I'm cleaning and tidying up my place, but I'm now switching over to hear some very inspiring and motivating guest speakers. I love how Evan is bringing on people from different backgrounds and giving us an insight into success in business and life in general. Thanks for sharing what you normally do on a day-to-day basis that make you so successful. You rock, Julie. Thank you for that review. All right, let's jump in. All right, Bradley, thank you for being on the podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, thank you for being here. So I just wanted to jump in and talk a little bit about how you got started with Podchaser.
So it really started in my car. So I do industrial sales, and I've been in outside sales for a long time. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I was listening to the Tim Ferriss show. And if anybody is a fan of Tim Ferriss, you know that some of his episodes are really good and some of them just absolutely suck. And so I was like, man, there's got to be a directory online where I can go and look at episode ratings instead of show ratings. And so I went on the internet and found out that it didn't exist. And so I actually posted on Reddit, on the podcast subreddit, and said, hey, is there an IMDb for podcasts? If not, does anybody want to make it with me? And kind of the rest is history. So that's how it started.
And how long ago was that?
It's like almost 2 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. So, and bring us up to speed on where you are today with the company.
So on that Reddit post, I had a guy named Ben, who's our CTO. He responded. Several people responded, and the team has shifted and changed as founding teams tend to do. And now there's 4 founders, and we just closed our first fundraising round. And so we are kind of going full bore developing the product for this pre-seed, seed round, however you want to define it, and going to market. So our beta is up now at podchaser.com, and the fundraising is really to release the list feature, which is coming out next week or maybe the week after. And that's just the ability, similar to Goodreads, to make a list of a bunch of episodes or a bunch of podcasts and send to somebody. It sounds really simple. There's not really an elegant way to do that yet. So we're creating that. And then the IMDb part of Podchaser is having credits, so that after this episode, you can go to Podchaser and you see Evan and Bradley. They can click on Bradley's profile or click on Evan's profile, see what other podcasts we've been on. So that kind of interlinking of people in the podcasting space hasn't been created. So that's what we're doing.
Me being a podcaster, I have a lot of questions. I don't know which one to go first, sure. But and just kind of to summarize, so you're almost making like the ability for people to make a playlist of podcasts. It's right. Like somebody makes a playlist on Spotify for music, right. They can go in and make a podcast playlist and send that to all their friends.
Right, like 15 best commercial real estate episodes of all time.
Right.
And you can click.
Monumental being one of those.
Yes, of course. Then, so you can do a single click, share that to somebody. They can listen to it through Podchaser, or we also have the ability to deep link with iTunes or with other players. So if you really like Pocket Cast or Player FM, you can click a button and it loads up in your favorite player. So it's a seamless solution for a playlist, essentially. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You can also comment on each episode with a little comment bubble and say, like, this one's good. It really gets going at, you know, the 25 minute mark. Skip this part, or this is really good for insurance or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah.
So how, you had also said the IMDb of podcasts, which right. I think is like amazing. I'm right. surprised it doesn't exist yet.
Yes.
Which is a great thing to say about a startup. Like,
yes.
That's when you know you're onto something.
Right.
And so I'm curious, how do you do that in the podcast? Like, how do you tag people?
Good question. So before I started doing this, I didn't know much about how IMDb functioned, and we're mirroring a lot of their functionality. And so with IMDb, about 98% of all their content is user generated, which is awesome. Investors really like hearing that term,
user-generated.
So it'll be user generation,
98%,
a whole lot of it.
Wow.
So users, if you see a tagline or a credit for somebody, IMDb certainly has editors, and they have a process to where users get a reputation score over time. And so today, if you were to go on a Podchaser and say that, you know, Oprah Winfrey was on the latest episode of Joe Rogan, she probably wasn't, and you would then in the future have a tougher time submitting data.
Right.
But if your data is good consistently, then we can give you an editor badge or something similar and trust your
data.
Some
incentive to...
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Where the gamification thing is really popular and works well. So yeah, it's really, certainly we will have editors who go in, probably focus on the top 50 podcasts, but for the other, you know, 500,000,
right.
It'll be users and it'll be podcasters. I'm certain that you will want the ability to tag people in your own show. And we expect that to be throughout the space.
Right.
The practice. So, yeah.
That's really cool. That sounds also like Wikipedia, where
right.
you can make suggestions to pages, and then somebody will either verify that or it'll go through, and but somebody will catch it.
Exactly. Yep. The process, the Wikipedia editing process, is pretty similar to how IMDb currently functions.
And then it'll have that star rating for each episode.
Right.
And then I'm guessing you'll have, and you, I think you guys already have like a feature where you can list the top rated podcasts or episodes.
Yeah, so you can filter. We have all kinds of filters and sorts. You can just filter the best podcast of all time. You can filter it by a certain date, and those filters and sorts are going to get better and smarter over time. Or, for example, after everybody rates this episode and gives it a 5-star, you can rate your podcast by top episode, so that you know when you're getting into a podcast with an overwhelming back catalog of episodes, you can know kind of where to start.
So how are you all gaining the user base that you have now?
So Reddit was actually a pretty huge space for us. We kind of made a community out of that. We also made a Slack channel, the podcast, our Podchaser community Slack, which has, I think, 300 or 400 people in it.
Wow.
And so we, you know, community is huge. You have to make a community. You have to galvanize it. And they are, the whole 1,000 true fans is certainly true. So throughout this beta process, we have 10,000 true fans. And it kind of has a compounding effect to where they really love a feature that we developed because they asked us for that feature. And then when we create something, people tend to use it. And that's because from the very beginning, 6 to 12 months before we even started coding, we asked, like, hey, what do you guys want? And what are the pain points in podcasting, and how can we address those? And when we make them for you, will you please use it? And generally, they return the favor and use the site.
Right. That's great to hear that is, you know, if you garner a community and you ask for feedback and you listen and you develop something based on what they want, then they will be doubly loyal to your product.
Exactly. And that's why it's amazing to me with these much larger companies, Twitter, you can't edit a tweet.
Yeah.
Like you still can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's thousands of people want it. There's certainly a way to do it maybe 5 seconds after your tweet.
Yeah.
So that you're not altering content. I get that. But like, develop the feature. Your users want it.
Exactly.
Test it. Come on, do it.
Yeah. And going to the other, you know, the user base or where people listen to podcasts.
Right.
I mean, I listen to all mine on iTunes, but I've always complained about the podcast app and like the inability to like effectively manage my own library of episodes and keep up with things. And it just, I mean, no bad ill to Apple, but I've always said, I'm like, well, it feel like they always like put the lower level engineers. I mean, I'm sure they're amazing engineers, but I'm like,
the podcast about the app on the back burner and the new redesign of the
exactly.
app is terrible. I use Pocket Casts for my playing, and then Podchaser, our role is to kind of be the gatekeeper and pass this data on to players. So we're going to integrate our ratings into these player apps, just like you see the little Rotten Tomatoes icon on
different
used
websites.
To be on Netflix, but on some other video player apps. We want to be kind of that data source that powers and makes your podcast players smarter. You can use Podchaser as a player app, and that's fine. But we have taken the strategy to work with players so that we're not forcing you into our walled garden to use our product. That's we're pretty much against that. It's not cool anymore.
Full integration into all the different platforms.
That's the plan.
So one question I would have, I absolutely love this idea, but how are you as a founder, how are you confronting the fact that what if some of the bigger players take on this idea and adapt it into their own?
So that you hear that all the time, and people are very protective of their IP, even if their IP is stupid. And I think that's pretty toxic to a founder. So we've been pretty darn public about this from the very beginning. Of course, there's going to be some specific things, some certain proprietary things you shouldn't disclose, especially if you're creating like a top secret hot sauce or something. But that, we're not doing that. Podchaser is the idea is much more valuable than the actual technology. And the user-generated content is very valuable. So as time progresses, Podchaser becomes more valuable because of the data it's collecting from its users about podcasts. So the more we do that, the more of a barrier we set between iTunes or Amazon or whoever wants to do this too. So it's much more likely that that company will buy us or acquire us than it is for them to develop their own product if they can get a head start with our data. So that's the strategic answer, but to go off what I was starting with is essentially if you're starting a startup and you're signing NDAs or you're making people sign NDAs, stop. Like, it's annoying. It's not cool. It's of course this is there are exceptions. If you're making, you know, some widget for biomedical, who knows? But if you're like making a website and that serves a pretty broad service like Podchaser, you need people to help you. You need engineers. You need advisors. And you need to be pretty open about your concept, because if you start out an email chain with somebody with an NDA, you're going to look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. And I think if you, going back to the community, if you create a loyal community and you give them what they want, then they'll keep coming back.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
So going back to kind of that starting moment, once you got the positive feedback from Reddit, you found someone that you could partner with. Could you go into a little bit about like how you built out that team? Like, did you have a coding background?
I am non-technical. I always tell people I'm going to get a tattoo on my forehead that says I am non-technical, because it saves a lot of time with conversations with other CTOs. So no, this is not my first time developing a company around technology. I think I have a pretty good handle on tech in general, but I would consider myself like a prosumer. I can't code. I coded like a calculator app in sixth grade or something. That's pretty much the extent of my coding ability. And my roommate in high school, our coding class, did most of my assignments. So I'm not very good at that. What I'm better at is I've been in sales for a long time, so I'm good at selling the concept. And I really like people. I love hiring people and finding out little nuggets of skills that they might have and empowering that with either, you know, motivation or capital. And so, which I guess kind of segues into the fact that I'm the CEO, which means I have to raise the money, which, by the way, I think is stupid. I think that people are always like, there has to be one person and one person only fundraising. And in our case, that I've done the majority of it, but one of my co-founders, Cole, he's fundraising too. And there's nothing wrong with that. And just because you have the CEO title, and again, I don't think that one person should have that role necessarily. But my point is, in all of this, is that fundraising is part of this whole thing. And that's something that I can do to help the people that code and that don't want to fundraise. Because, no, you definitely shouldn't have your engineers fundraising. Of course, it does happen. But for the most part, it is better to kind of separate church and state between the the marketing and fundraising guys and the engineers.
Yeah, it's focusing on what value you add to the company and what you're good at.
With the exception of Mark Zuckerberg and Evan Spiegel, is that his name?
Yeah.
Those are the unicorns.
Right.
Literally, yeah. So.
So go into a little bit of how you started hiring people, how you found the right people, maybe even like how you had to get rid of people.
Right. So the beginning of a startup is like you're like in the placental womb and things are moving around. Things are going to change and develop. And that's just kind of how it is. So we had several founders that didn't work out for whatever reason. No hard feelings, and always keep things, of course, as amicable as possible. It's high school and people want to feel valued and loved, and everyone wants 100% equity. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. So you kind of have to develop a strategy. There are like rubrics you can use where you input your hours, and I think that's stupid. So like they have algorithms to determine equity. And I think at the very beginning of a startup, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So you really just have to kind of sit down with somebody. Generally speaking, if you're at the very beginning of something and there's two of you, split it 50-50. Or if one person's going to do it full time and the other person's not, maybe 70-30 or 60-40. And our equity has changed a million times before we kind of solidified it, wrote it down, did the operating agreement, signed it. And keeping it open as long as possible is smart, because things get really sticky no matter what. Because you are essentially, what you're doing with equity is you are assigning a value to someone's intrinsic worth. That's what you're doing.
Right.
It is what you're doing. And so that gets very sensitive. And so you have to be really careful about how you do that. So that was that's always a challenge. I think we came out of it really well. And then as far as hiring, what we do tech-wise, we have a really talented designer in Brian and a really talented coder in Ben. And then for a lot of the legwork, we contract it through Upwork or through whatever means we can find really talented people. Most of our talent currently is in the Ukraine. They're affordable. They're super talented. And at the beginning of things, generally it makes sense to have contracted workers. You don't want to get stuck into an employment contract.
Yeah,
super
you don't
early on.
Have to commit to
exactly.
payroll every 2 weeks.
Exactly. You want to be able to cut that off as soon as possible, but it doesn't work out, especially if you're lean and you're raising not a giant round. That's kind of what's worked for us.
So how big is your team in Ukraine right now?
So there's like 3 full-time people in Ukraine, and we have some contract work that was done in Mexico. Two of the founders, I don't know if I mentioned that the two founders are in Australia. I've never met them. I may never meet them, and that's okay.
And then was a connection from Reddit.
From Reddit.
Wow.
Which I am a huge Redditor. Go Reddit. And the other founder is in Indianapolis. So we're all over the place, and I'm a firm believer in kind of an office-less, region-less future. And I think that's awesome that we're all over the world, and I think it brings different perspectives and different talents and makes the team stronger.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you're like you're the modern day startup. You know, you have guys on Upwork full time and two founders in Australia.
Yep.
And your team is all over the place, but yet you're building a loyal customer base,
right,
that are using your website on a regular
from
basis
all over the world.
Yeah.
And that we're building a global product. So that it makes sense. Of course, there's times where it local does make sense. But for this, why would I want everybody in one city with a very narrow view of the world? It doesn't make any sense to me. So it works well. And we use Slack religiously. Slack is awesome. Without Slack, I can't imagine. What would we do? Email each other? I don't know.
We need to email?
So Slack has been a super powerful, affordable tool. It's no wonder I think it was the fastest growing valuation company last year.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I myself have never been I've never bought into Slack.
Oh my gosh.
So let's take a quick aside to tell me why you like Slack and try to, I guess, convince me why I should use it.
So Slack, it only makes sense if you have probably more than 3 people. So you have to have a pretty large amount of people. And then other than that, if you qualify for that, you should be using Slack, because you can organize. So for commercial real estate, you could have a channel for deal flow. You could have a channel for insurance. You could have a channel for day-to-day activities, one for accounting, budgeting. I mean, you can really narrowly specify what you're talking about. Otherwise, through email chains, you're talking about 10 different things, 10 different people, and different. It sucks. So for internal communication, Slack works really well. It's not rocket science. The technology's been around for a long time, but they just made it really, really user-friendly. And then for things that you're coding with, we have integrations with productivity apps like Trello and Gantt Board. And there's just all kinds of integrations that make it really easy to see what's going on. Every time somebody leaves a review or rating on Podchaser, we get notified on a Slack channel. Like, it's magic. It's amazing. So, Slack is great. Of course, it has to be used in the right way. But if you're working in a team environment, it beats email out of the water. For sure.
I think I'll have to try it out.
Absolutely.
So going into, let's also touch on your fundraising.
Right. Yeah. It's my first time fundraising, which means it's much, much harder. If I did fundraising again tomorrow, it'd be much, much easier because everyone has to kind of learn how to do it. Unfortunately, access to capital is still kind of tough and it's still kind of an old boys club kind of thing. So you really need to find buy-in from a big player. And then this is cliche at this point, but once you find your lead investor, it's really easy. And I really mean that. It took us months to find the guy who was willing to say like, hey, I believe in this. I'm a patrillionaire and I want all my friends to come in with me. So it took time for that to happen. And once it did happen, it was a trickle effect. My advice is, I have a background in sales. And so I'm a professional harasser. And that is crucial. If you want somebody to give you money, they are not thinking about you as much as you're thinking about them. That is 100% the truth. And so there's a perfect example. I met one of our investors at an event where I pitched Podchaser several months ago. And he had interest and seemed like a good guy. And, you know, we emailed back and forth, sent him the pitch deck. And then things didn't really go. I was like, oh, this is probably dead. And then I think like the week of the closing of our round, I sent him an email. I'm like, hey, I just followed up and said, hey, you still interested? And he's like, oh, here's 50 grand. It just, you know, wow. I would have never imagined there was a 0.001% chance that would have happened. But it's an email. It takes 3 seconds on my phone.
And you don't know until you make the ask.
Exactly. So you absolutely have to ask. You have to follow up. You really do kind of have to harass these people, because as soon as you get some buy-in and you get some like, oh, I'm interested, then you need to take advantage of that. That person then owes you their ear for a certain amount of time until they tell you to leave them alone.
Right.
In which case you should leave them alone. but yeah, it's just 100%. You're closing sales, a few sales to close a fundraising round. And it's certainly becoming easier with the internet. I think I only met half of our investors in real life, a lot of phone calls, Skype calls, things like that. And just kind of putting yourself out there. It's super awkward pitching a company that people may not understand what a podcast is. In Kentucky, it's not the best thing in the world, but it happened. So anybody can do it.
So how many doors did you have to knock on until you got that first investor?
Honestly, not that many, surprisingly. So I kind of just went on gust.com, which is like a marketplace for investing. And there's a bunch of like angel groups around the state. And I just kind of threw our pitch deck out there and had some people email me back and say, hey, you should talk to this person. And then really pretty much every single investor came from one single line of networking, where one person introduced me to one. And then, so the first person that didn't end up investing introduced me to Gil Holland. And then Gil Holland introduced me to our lead investor. And then the money came from there. So now with that said, I was told no at least a dozen, two dozen times. And that's totally probably normal, and probably I'm surprised I didn't get any, even more no's.
Yeah.
But I was told I pitched large groups of angels. Actually, no, that's false. Probably at least 100 people, because there were pretty large syndicates that said no. So yeah, you're going to be told no a lot, and it's a numbers game. there's lots of money out there. You just have to find it.
Yeah. And you're right. It takes that initial buy-in.
Right.
And then it's like this social pressure,
yes.
The fear of missing out.
It really is. I think that FOMO and social pressure was a much larger role in this than anything Podchaser ever did. We could have 10 billion users, and I don't think that would even matter. It's much more about like, oh, he did it? Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And I think that is... unfortunately kind of antiquated, and I think that should go away, because if you have an investor thesis, you should be looking at a lot more than social pressure, but we're humans, and that's right. Just kind of how it works.
I see it the same way in real estate too.
Yeah.
Fundraising for real estate. And it also brings me to what I read about Howard Schultz and Starbucks. He pitched Starbucks like 230 uh-huh. times to 230 different investment groups.
Yeah.
And it was the last one that invested in him. And
his interview with, he's done a lot of interviews lately. I think he was on Alec Baldwin's podcast, and then he did one with Tim Ferriss. And he tells a story about how his, I think it was his father-in-law, he had children, they had no money, and the father of his bride came to him and said, "Dude, you got to stop this Starbucks thing. Like, it's over, game over." And he didn't do it. You have to have that like grit, that stupid persistence, to make it happen. And that's certainly been my case. And I think I had an advantage having been in sales for so long and being told no 100 times a day. That's just how it's been for me forever. And you just have to let it slide off your back. It still sucks.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
But just how it is.
You always want to get the sale, but.
Right. Yeah. Being told no is cold calling, and being told no are invaluable skills.
Yeah. And having that will to keep going.
Yep.
So, and also in your starting your company and having this fundraising, what is that going to empower you and the company to do?
So for us as a technology company, our developers or our founders have been working on this on the nights and weekends. So this funding allows them to do this full time and have our founders go full time. And so that's a huge thing for us. Instead of working on this 10 hours a week, we can work on it 60 hours a week, and gives us way more time to develop the product faster. And then also gives us money to go to Podcast Movement and pitch our product to thousands of podcasters and market the product. So getting that kind of like pouring fuel on the fire and really getting the product out there as quickly as possible so that we can be first to market.
So I think it's important for our listeners to know that you started this, you know, as a side hustle. You started this while you were full time.
Right. And we were talking about this before we started recording, that business is kind of a myth. And I did this full time. I'm working full time and running this company and raising an entire fundraising round while working full time. Now, my job, being in the nature of that, it's an outside sales position. I have more flexibility because I don't have to be at a physical location from 8 to 5. But still, I worked on this in the evenings and weekends, and it's totally possible. You can start 10 companies if you want to do it. You'd be crazy, but you can do it. There's a lot of time in the day, especially when you're young and you don't require maybe as much sleep, or you don't have children yet. And you don't have those huge time sucks in your life yet, go for it.
What have you given up to start this?
Man, you know, I don't give up anything. You know, I don't play video games as much as I used to. Still play video games. I'm still playing that Rocket League. So, you know, I think it's very important to find balance. And in this freelance economy, if something's taking a huge suck of your time, delegate it. And that's kind of how I view things. And you know, I my wife, if she's listening to this, I still think I spend a lot of time with you, Angelica, and I hope that you're happy with that. But you know, it really comes down to how you value your time. And when I say how, I mean, to me, working on Podchaser until midnight is more fun than anything. And so that's a great use of my time. And another thing is, get yourself a wife or significant other that's a nurse that works night shift, because 3 nights a week I'm to myself and can work on this stuff. So that schedule, actually, we got married in January, and that schedule has really been perfect for us, because she can sleep during the day while I'm working, and then while I work on PodChaser during the night, she's at work. So it works really well. So no, I don't think that, I think if you're sacrificing too much of your time, you're probably maybe just doing it wrong, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I think what you touched on is having a supportive partner. I think that's
huge.
Hands down, you know, if you're in a relationship, you need to have that significant other that's pushing you to do better, supporting you, allowing you, giving you time. And that's what I have with Jeanette. And I think that's so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes that isn't what people have. And they get... They get themselves down. They think they're not doing the right thing, and they end up beating themselves up over it.
I think it's important that if you call yourself an entrepreneur or whatever, when you're going into a relationship, to be like, listen, I'm like a weirdo. When you talk to your parents about me, you're not gonna say he's a doctor. You're gonna say he's I don't really know. He does a few things, and sometimes you know it'll be 3 a.m. We gotta go to the Airbnb and like fix the toilet or something.
Right,
that's just kind of how it is. And I think to some people that's really attractive, and that's a cool relationship and keeps things for us. Every day is completely different, and we love it. It's something. It's like a dopamine high that you chase. For some other people, it's like, wow, you're a loser. you're a freak, and no thank you.
Right.
Go with a doctor. So, I think it's important to kind of get buy-in before you enter a relationship as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's great advice. So speaking of Airbnb, you and I touched on, I mean, that's one of the things that we discuss a lot outside of this podcast is we both have Airbnbs.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your Airbnbs and then also, you know, what it's enabled you to do.
Right. So Airbnb for me is wealth generation. Now this can be a lot of people start, you know, with what do they call it?
House hacking. Right.
I didn't do that. I kind of did that. I didn't do that just because to me, having somebody live in my basement freaks me out because I'm a privacy nut in some ways. But anyway, I actually was playing pool with a buddy and he was like, you know, I think I want to get into real estate. And I was like, sure. And my best friend, Cole, he had started his own Airbnb right before I did. And it's hard to describe how incredible the demand side of Airbnb is. It seems fake. You can be in some podunk town and your occupancy rate will be, I guarantee you, will be higher than you think it will be. And I knew that because of my friend who did it before me. So we gathered up some funds and bought a $45,000 house. And whoever's listening to this in California, I'm sorry, but in Evansville, Indiana. And that's kind of where we started, I think like 18 months ago. And now we have three of them. And we were able to purchase the subsequent properties just with cash flow, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because Airbnb makes you so much money. So that's how we started it. And we put all the money back into the back to the company to buy more and more subsequent units. Eventually, we might take some from it. But Airbnb is a pretty fantastic. It's changing the world. And it's just an amazing alternative to hotels.
With your Airbnb business, how have you been able to automate that?
Okay, so to me, from the very beginning, it's all about kind of setting expectations. And for me and my partner, Asher, it was really important that we don't think about this at all or hardly any. So we, of course, do the setup, and it's important for us to get the furniture right and the design and the photos and all that stuff. But once it's done and I don't want to touch it. I don't want to think about it. So it's comes down to finding really, really good people that you trust and finding a rock star cleaner. Cleaners are like the most important part of your Airbnb process. Find somebody you trust who shows up on time. If they can't, they train somebody or you train somebody to be a backup. And once you do that, if you've got an electronic keypad, preferably one that doesn't have a motor in it, that's manual, so you don't want to replace a battery. I hate batteries. Some of these keypads, the first one we bought, it lasted for like 3 months. That's not long enough. You need really good ones that last a much longer time. So getting a good keypad, finding a good cleaner, and then just setting it up right the first time is huge. And to me, now with three of them, and I know that you probably agree with this, it starts to get to the point where it's like, okay, maybe I need somebody to handle the communications. But then again, Airbnb allows you to have co-host that can handle communications. And since it's me and a partner, so far I think three is completely manageable. Two people, probably six would be maybe the cutoff to where you might need to get some property management.
Right. And you're able to, with Airbnb, you're able to get way more than you could with a traditional long-term renter.
So I think I always fear competition in some ways, but Airbnb is definitely going to be more of a time suck than a traditional rental. So with traditional rental, you truly can pretty much go sleep and maybe worry about the plumbing once a year, best case scenario. But with Airbnb, you're going to have to think about it every day. That's how it is. And you're going to have really, really annoying guests, and you're going to have your heat go out. It's just going to happen. So it is certainly, to me, worth it, because you're going to generate 2, 3, 4 times more than you will a traditional rental. And that additional cash flow and the like triple cap rate is worth it to me. But I understand why people would prefer traditional rental.
Right.
Or maybe some people will just kind of diversify and do both. It's probably smart.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, we talk about a lot on this podcast, is how real estate can enable you to the wealth generation,
right,
the passive income generation, or somewhat active income generation. It's just that ability to allow you to do other things and,
right,
and focus on what you really love.
Yeah. I feel much more comfortable taking maybe a smaller salary and working on high risk things if I know that when I turn 40 or 50, I cut myself a multi-million-dollar check that I had to think about for a long time.
Right.
So yeah, I completely agree with that.
So I wanted to jump back to Podchaser real quick.
Sure.
There was a question I had, because I've, you know, I'm always thinking of business ideas. I know there's other entrepreneurs out there that think that way.
Right.
And I love the idea of where businesses are heading with databases. So
right,
how would you, if we had a listeners that had an idea that had to center around starting a database or a user generated database, how would you suggest they get started?
Oh man, well, it's really hard. So if you're doing user generated content, I think the most important thing that we did was start talking to our users way, way, way before we made the product. It might sound like a good idea to you and maybe 100 other people, but maybe not a million other people. Because you have to keep in mind that there's kind of a 1% rule of data, that if you have 100 users, one of them is likely to contribute and 99 are likely to consume. And so you need a very, very large amount of users to make a database that's user-generated kind of start. Also, if you can find, so podcasting has a lot of data out there already through RSS feeds. And what we're doing is we're building on top of that. So we already have a base layer of 500,000 podcasts and millions of episodes. So for us, that was great, because if you went to our site and you could only find 5 podcasts, then you would never come back.
Right.
So it's important, I think, with the internet, generally speaking, there is a base layer, even if it's pretty bare bones like podcasting is, to start with that if you can. And if not, you really need to understand your user really early on and literally talk to them on the phone or meet them in person and say, like, why are you're a weirdo going on database sites and entering data? Why do you do it? And who are 100 of your friends that also do it? And where do I find them? Because finding them is hard. And we find them on forums and subreddits, and they may be more likely to use a site like Goodreads or Letterboxd or IMDb. So kind of finding users from there, it's tough.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And I think that hits on a really good point with any business, not just a database, is find your customers, know exactly who they are, like,
right,
be obsessive about who your customer is, and then figure out what they want before you go off spending, you know, in
wasting
some cases, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars developing a product that they may not even want in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds cliche because everyone's recommending you do it, but it's very true. If I would start over with previous startups, I would have done that. I mean, months of just finding the people that might use your service, asking them, hey, would you pay for this? We made a Google survey and asked, like, hey, would you pay for this feature? Would you do this? And that was just a hugely important thing for us. And also, it let us create a big marketing list, an email list, from the very beginning of, I think, over 1,000 people. So very important.
That's awesome.
Build the audience before the product. Definitely.
Yeah, that's great advice. And then speaking of next steps, what are the next steps for Podchaser and being able to to take it to a broader audience and then also right. monetizing it.
So the list feature is coming out next. That's coming out this month. It's June. Is it June? It's June. And then after that, the people feature, you're going to see a landing page soon where you can start inputting, you know, I am Evan. I am a guest, or I'm a producer, I'm a host, and here are three things about me. So then the people feature is going to come out. That's going to be a big deal for us. It's pretty tricky to get that right. So we've been developing that for a long time. So we're getting it out as soon as we can this summer. And then our main focus right now before monetization is on our minds, but what's more valuable to us is growth. So we want to get way more traffic and create way more content. To get more traffic, you have to create content. To get content, you have to get users. To get users, I don't know. So it's this is like vicious chicken egg problem that you just have to test and try. And you know, we didn't get a million bajillion users day one. Nobody does. It's a trial and error thing, and it gets better daily. And that's just how you build an internet company. You just have to try. And then what I do is I reach out to the Rotten Tomatoes founder and the Letterboxd founder and the IMDb founder. IMDb and Letterboxd, the Letterboxd founder and the IMDb, the seventh employee, are both advisors to Podchaser. And I just emailed him and said, hey man, this is really hard. You did this for movies, or you did this for TV shows. How do I do this for podcasts? What would you do differently if you started your company in 2018? And so finding those people, and with Podchaser, there's probably only a handful who can really relate to exactly what we're doing with media. So finding those people and tapping into their brains and asking them every day, hey man, what the heck? How do you do this? It's been really, really a big advantage for us.
I think that's really cool. Honestly, like, just reaching out to people and having the guts to reach out to Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, and then now you have a connection with them and you're able to tap into their failures and their experiences. They're vastly more experienced and built out and learned a whole industry of database. And so,
and these people, you'd be surprised. Now, some of them are scumbags. They just are, and they don't want to talk to you. But most of these guys that we reach out to, and girls, once you send an email and say like, hey, stroke their ego. Absolutely. Works with everybody. Hey, like, what you've built is awesome. And also don't be a sleaze bag. Just be upfront and honest. Obviously don't compliment them too much, cause that's just creepy, but say, hey, this is what I'm doing. I know that you did this and you did a great job. Can you help us? And maybe that's just on a buddy buddy basis. And generally in this scenario, it's going to be for equity, a small amount of equity. That's just, a huge thing that everyone should do. You should always have some older people on your team or on your side that have done what you've done before, so that when you're fundraising or building a product, you can call them up and be like, hey man, I have no clue what I'm doing. Cause no one knows what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing. So having people with that experience is huge. Definitely recommend it for a startup.
That's amazing. I think that's awesome advice. Everybody write that down. All right. So we're going to jump into our monumental questions.
Great.
So what does success mean to you?
You know, you told me this question, then I was going to think about it, and then I still don't really know the answer. Success to me, I think financial freedom is a huge part of that for me. Having the ability, even if you don't do it, but having the ability to quit your real job at any point in time, I think is a very big part in a positive psyche. Personally, I don't know why. I just had a bug in me since I was 12 that I hate working for people. I don't know why. There's some people out there that are much smarter and much more capable than I am, but as soon as they're my superior, I can't stand them. So that's why I've done the real estate and I've done startups and just trying really, really hard to make it to where I didn't have to be stuck in a cubicle or stuck in a place where I didn't want to be forever. That to me is depressing, really depressing. And I think the world is changing and we're going away from that. So success to me, I think that financial freedom and financial optionality is a big part of it. And then to me, that enables, it sounds terrible, the money doesn't buy happiness. And I think the study shows that, you know, I think $50,000 is kind of the threshold. Anything beyond that. So as long as you're comfortable, really, you should be happy. But, and then just having the ability to have autonomy, for me, And financial freedom is, of course, part of autonomy. But autonomy, to me, is probably the number one success factor. Being able to just do what I want when I want to do it is massive. So you just, generally speaking, have to have financial freedom before you can have true autonomy.
Right, and that'll lead to autonomy.
Exactly.
I think that's right. I think a lot of people resonate with that.
Right. I don't need $1 billion, but if I can just do what I want day to day, that's huge.
Yeah.
Truly do what you want every day. That's huge.
So do you have like a morning ritual or a habit that you have that leads to a successful day or a productive day?
No, I don't. I know that statistically speaking, most very successful people get up very early and have a regimen. I really don't. Every day to me is pretty crazy and different. I can argue and say that I live a little bit of a more opportunistic lifestyle. That's really just probably an excuse for being lazy and wanting to sleep more. I personally am more of a night owl, so I'm more likely to be more productive and to be happier at 2 a.m. than I am at 6 a.m. So that's how I function, and it's probably maybe not as healthy. But I really don't have much of a regimen at all outside of regimens that we build within the company or a job or the real estate. I am a believer in processes, and I think that's important. But as far as my own life, nope. It's day to day, man. It's whatever.
And it's getting the most important thing done.
Yeah, really. I mean, for me, on a day to day basis, I have such a sense of shame and guilt, and I just hate myself if I'm not being productive in some way.
Right.
Now,
I felt that.
Absolutely. So, you know, on the flip side, if I work really, really hard on a Monday and a Tuesday, Wednesday, I might do nothing or very close to absolutely nothing. And so that's kind of, I have this internal monster within me that if I'm not working towards, you know, true autonomy or true financial freedom on a day-to-day basis in some shape or form, it really does depress me. So, you know, warding off depression, it's a pretty good motivator.
Yeah. So what is a favorite podcast or podcast you're currently listening to?
Work Life with Adam Grant is really good. And it's a TED Talk people have produced it. And it's a social psychologist. And he goes into these awesome workplaces like NASA and astronauts and talks to these high-performing people. And he asks them, you know, like, how do you do it? And like, how does your team function? And why are you productive? And why is this with a psychological background? And I have a degree in psychology, which is completely worthless. But I think it's just very interesting. And I think that those kinds of interviews and that kind of access that TED has been able to get, it's really good. It's a really good podcast. And the most recent huge boom of startup and entrepreneurial types of podcasts are getting worse and worse in quality, and you're hearing the same stuff over and over and over. So it's very refreshingly fresh and new and different. And so I've been just devouring that one. I think it's pretty new, so I think there's only a handful of episodes out, but yeah, that's a really good one. And Tim Ferriss is the old Tim Ferriss, in my opinion. I think one of my all-time favorite interviews on his show is the one with Mike Rowe, the Dirty Jobs guy. And despite your politics or despite what you think about his show, it's just a really, really open, good, awesome interview, and one that I've listened to more than once. So I Tim Ferriss is definitely what got me into podcasting. So that's another one that I still listen to most of his episodes, though their quality has gone a little bit down now, in my opinion.
We'll put links to both of those in the show notes and on the Podchaser notes.
Perfect.
Okay, in closing, how can people follow you or reach out to you?
So follow us on Twitter at Podchaser. We're very active on Twitter. If you message us, we'll respond to you in 5 minutes. Join our community Slack. You can find it if you go to podchaser.com. There's a little Slack button at the bottom. You can join there. You can email me at bradley@podchaser.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at @BRadleyDavis, which is Bradley Davis with the E before the B and the R. I was too late on to get the Bradley Davis handle. And yeah, that's about it. I'm happy to talk to anybody, and definitely go to podchaser.com and make an account and start and rate this episode first and go from there.
All right, you heard it. Everybody go out and create your Podchaser account. And I've personally used it. I can vouch for it. It seems like it's really going to be, it gives users more ability and more power in podcasting. So with that, I want to thank you, Bradley.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Guys, I truly had a blast today with Bradley, and I hope you did too. We delved into so many different topics, so many different things that, you know, a lot of you all are thinking about, and a lot of things that I hope add a lot of value to your life. So if you're listening right now, please go to wherever you're on social media and post this episode. Let me know that you're listening. Let me know that you're enjoying the podcast. That would really, truly mean a lot to me. And if... you know, send me a message. Send me a message. My email is evan@evanholiday.com. Let me know you're listening. And with that, please go out and also rate, subscribe, review, follow the podcast. That's really what helps us grow this. And with that, I hope you have an amazing day. And we'll see you next week.